A disturbing story in the Irish Independent today from Laura Larkin. It's about an air ambulance which was targeted by a blinding laser beam as it was transferring a critically ill newborn child to hospital. The infant was being moved from Letterkenny to the Rotunda Maternity Hospital for urgent treatment when it was hit by the high-frequency green laser. For those trying to pilot the aircraft, it was like looking into a bright green sun. It happened 10 minutes before the helicopter was due to land in Dublin at 10 past 10 as it flew over Cavan on Wednesday night. A doctor and a nurse from the Rotunda were looking after the newborn, who was in the incubator at the back of the 12-seater aircraft. As the team were rushing the baby for life-saving care, the pilots had no choice but to continue the flight. And you'd have to wonder at the why someone would feel the need to shine a laser into someone's, into a helicopter, and a medevac helicopter, if it wasn't bad enough, it was any helicopter. Okay, we're going to be joined in studio by Chef Brian McDermott after this quick break. You're very welcome back to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio with Greg Hughes. It's 6 minutes past 11 in studio with me now and smelling delightfully, and I'm not sure it's his aftershave, but all the food he's brought with him, is Chef Brian McDermott. You're very welcome into the studio, Brian.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for coming in. And it's in the context of the Homegrown Food Festival that's taking place in the Aura Leisure Centre today and tomorrow, isn't it?
It is indeed, and a big day for Letterkenny as well, because this is the first venture into the sort of whole food festival scene that really has been popping up right around the country. So for me personally, it's nice to actually be in your own county, demonstrating and showcasing the local produce. So 2 days, kicking off today, actually kicking off now at 11, so great chefs throughout the whole day Saturday, and again tomorrow, demonstrations every hour on the hour. Over 80 producers all showcasing their local produce.
It's very important, isn't it? Because, you know, you have choices. You've got, you know, you can get stuff very, very cheaply if you wish. You can get stuff that pay a little bit of a premium for. You can support your own county and buy local. And I mean, people have a lot to think about, don't they? And I mean, I suppose it's getting that message out. If you can support your local supplier, do so.
Yes, if you can, do. And more importantly, Greg, I mean, there's an awful lot of little sort of pockets of people around Donegal at the moment, around the Northwest, who are starting to produce food, are starting to add value to it. And without these festivals, without being able to showcase, to allow people to come along and to taste, and to allow people to purchase and take home and experience this product, you know, they can't get to market, they can't get anywhere. So that process starts, and there's a lot of support going on even within the Enterprise Board for those people. So if they don't get that opportunity, don't get the feedback, don't get trading, we won't start to sort of nourish them good companies that are coming along. So that's exactly what this festival does, gives mm-hmm. that opportunity. And more importantly, people do have the choice. They do have the choice where they want to spend their money today, whether they're doing their bulk shop or otherwise. Spend that little bit more local, and it's going to come right back into the economy. Now, that's tiredly being said, but statistics this week back it up, in that local producers in Ireland last year, all of them said that they increased employer numbers. In other words, they employed more people. And for the very simple reason is that they're trading better, because people are actually purchasing at local level.
Can I ask you to jump to that seat, because that microphone, just it's picking you up fine, but there's just a funny sound off it. There was a gap in the market, I suppose, in terms of this type of festival in Letterkenny too, wasn't there?
There was. I mean, the Taste of Donegal is a very, very successful festival. Runs at the end of August. We've got Northwest Garden Show. We've got really good festivals, but Letterkenny's a big town. You know, it deserved a festival like this. And I have to say, all credit to the two guys, you know, to Joe and Darren, who took this on, because this is a big undertaking. Again, today it's kicked off. The marketing's over. The word getting out about it, it's over. It's now up to the people to come to support this at local level. And again, you're not just supporting those two guys in a festival, you're actually supporting the 80 odd producers and the chefs that are coming. And I mean, really high profile names are coming, you know, starting to come to Donegal, but they're not just coming with a bag of ingredients. They're coming and they're saying, okay guys, tell me, what have you got in this area? What have you got that we can use, that we can showcase? And not just the showcasing it here in Letterkenny this weekend, they'll take that back to the festivals in Dublin, in Limerick, in Dublin, all over. So again, we're carrying that Northwest brand.
And that's it, you know, I mean, I suppose in the first instance, we locally can support local producers and what have you. But I mean, you know, the reputation, the county's reputation can grow and grow. And there's fantastic people, not least yourself, that are promoting Donegal as a food destination as well, because there is a market, a tourism market there for that, isn't there?
I think first and foremost Donegal is a seriously good brand, and then to break it down into attaching it to food, because, you know, people love and associate Donegal right across, not just Ireland, but right across, particularly the UK and even worldwide. But if you attach a food product to that, you know, we've seen that with the likes of Donegal Rapeseed Oil. It's rapeseed oil. No one knew what that was. Put the word Donegal on it. All of a sudden, up it pops. And I think that's one of the best products to come out of not just this county, to come out of this country. And it's been screamed about right across Ireland, right across Europe. You know, that's growing outside Highland Radio, outside Falkara, Newton, Burt, right across Donegal. That's natural. That's food. It's not travelling. It's easily processed. There's no artificials going in. Not just that company. There's numerous stories. And this is the opportunity for the public to come along, talk to these producers, because normally they're either in their tractors harvesting, they're pressing, or they're at home making jams, chutneys. Come out and meet them.
Say I'm listening to you on the radio and I'm listening to, you know, some of these features on other radio stations and on here as well. I'm thinking, well, that's not really for me. They're not talking to me. This is almost like food art. It's a, you know, it's a little group that I'm not a member of. How do I buy this product? Would I be welcome to do so? Where do I go?
Well, it's a very good point that you're raising, because, again, and this is something that I'll always stick to, and that is, you know, if I'm going to use a product that first and foremost has local provenance to it, in other words, it's got a story, because food's about a story now as well. The next big thing for people is, well, where can I get it after today? You know, and again, that's what this is about. This is about, you can purchase it today, but when you meet these producers, they'll tell you, look, we're starting to sell it in our local shops in the Falkara area, in the Burt area, wherever it may be. And that has given them that platform to rise them to the next level. There's a following level on from that, which is taking them to the small retailers, you know, again, in the local setting and in the local shops. So without these vessels, without this processes, we can't advance it, and we can't advance it as a Donegal brand in food.
So you're saying everybody has to buy into this. It's suppliers, it's retailers, and the community. You know, it has to be holistic.
I think, you know, if you think to anyone that's sitting listening today, they've got money in their purse, money in their wallet. They make decisions based on, you know, value for money, and rightly so. You can't blame them in terms of their shopping and groceries. But I always pull people back to one simple thing, and that is, why do we eat? First and foremost, we eat to get our vitamins to stay alive. But the great benefit to me in shopping local and buying local and getting food local is that unprocessed of it, you know, that you're not seeing the hidden salts and so on. So therefore, you're getting your maximum nutrition when you are cooking. And this is what I'll be displaying in my demonstration later on today at 4 o'clock, is that cooking is simple, because when you think about it, it is the produce, number one. Secondly, it's applying heat. So regardless of you're a chef with a quality name, or you're a chef in your own home, because you are, everyone is a chef, a cook in their own home. No one owns these skills. We have an obligation to pass them on. I have experience. I'll pass that on. My mum taught me how to cook. Everyone passes on these skills. So ultimately, it comes back to adding heat to good produce. We need the producers as much as we need the stove, that we need the heat. And ultimately, you're going to end up with quality food on your plate. So that's what I would encourage people to think about when they're buying a local product, is the vitamin content they're getting.
Talking about what we're capable of in terms of cooking, I presume it's often, you know, what makes a great chef doesn't necessarily have to be something incredibly exciting. It can be the most simplest thing that makes something that we would cook compared to what they cook taste completely different, if you understand.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Do not be afraid of the chefs and the names and the profiles that they have. You know, they do it for a living. And yes, some of them will make it quirky. Some of them will make it different. Some of us will put our own stamp on it. But ultimately, it comes back to a couple of things. It comes back to choosing good produce, applying a little bit of heat, and going with your gut, excuse the pun, but go with your gut, go with your feeling to see what is actually going to work in terms of a recipe. Less is more in terms of ingredients. I've seen that with taking salt out of the diet. You want to taste the food, not the salt, not mast and salt, cream, butter. That's gone. It needs to go. You know, we have a new health minister this week.
I'll let you continue that point, but it's a curiosity with you in that, you know, because seasoning you associate with chefs, and then salt you associate with seasoning. And then, you know, you've got the name as a no-salt chef. I think you've gone beyond that, far beyond that now at this point, perhaps. So it's kind of almost a contradiction, but it's proof that, you know, you can eat healthily, but also with the taste.
You can, and I've had to prove it to myself first and foremost, Greg, in a very, very hard way, because us as chefs, you know, and I often repeat this, but the main reason why I cook without salt is having multiple heart cardiac issues at 33 years of age. As a chef working in a kitchen, you know, you've got your high temperatures, white walls, little fresh air, you've got all of that going on. So I had to look at food, and I had to look at it in a way that I improved my lifestyle and my diet to make sure that I'm going to be around for the next 50 or 60 years for my kids. So taking salt out, I was in no man's land in terms of tasting food. I couldn't taste anything because we were classically trained, butter, salt, cream. Mm-hmm. That's how all chefs were trained. So when I stripped it back, I got nothing. And I didn't get it for 6 weeks. It was 6 months before I could finally get this subtle flavour coming in. It was broccoli. I always distinctly remember picking up a piece of broccoli, and it was actually raw. It was purple broccoli that was growing locally.
Yeah.
And I ate it, and I thought, wow, what is going on there? What have they done to this broccoli? They've absolutely destroyed it. But they hadn't. It was actually us, and us as chefs and cooks, that were destroying it, in my opinion, then. So that journey started, and it changed. And thankfully, now it has a huge following in terms of the no salt, and that can only improve the health, tackle the whole obesity issue.
See,
Ireland
when you
has.
Go down to the likes of these events, the homegrown food festival, and there's a load of chefs down there. Are you on the periphery to this? All say, well, don't talk to him. He doesn't want to use salt.
Well, it's very interesting you say that, because about 5 years ago, I mean, some these chefs, we're all good friends on the circuit. You know, you've got the big names, you've got Rachel's, you've got the Nev McGuire's. We're all very good friends. And yes, there's a little bit of banter, and you know, I'll hide the salt from their tray. They'll deliberately change my sugar to salt. You know, that all goes on. It's a little bit of fun. But I remember, distinctly remember a guy who'll remain nameless, a well-known name 5 years ago. And he said to me, he pulled me aside and he says, what are you doing? He said, you're going to absolutely ruin this for the rest of us. But within about a year and a half, and within about 2 years, he actually phoned me one day and he says, I got that so wrong, Brian. He says, you're seriously onto something here. Mm. He says, and you're really proving a really good, strong point. And you've got me thinking every time I season my food, I'm thinking about not using salt. Because seasoning is the addition of another ingredient that complements another one. It's not just salt. So, Greg, I can see your eyes.
I'm just trying to figure out what's on there. It looks lovely.
Okay, I'll tell you what I've done today, just for your programme as well. It's just that kind of sort of brunch. So it's missing breakfast going into lunch. And I'm conscious that, you know, this month and this, particularly this weekend, Donegal becomes a holiday destination. Mm-hmm. And you've got people waking up in caravan homes, motor homes, you know, and guests self-catering houses. They don't want to be cooking full-scale breakfast. So the idea of what I've done here that I'm going to tell you about now is done in a one pan. So I've taken what you would call the traditional fry, because did you know that 70% of fries are eaten on a Saturday morning?
Oh, well, you know I didn't know that. Go on. It's a rhetorical question.
So for me,
I'm
thinking about no salt and all of that.
Yeah.
How can you do that in one pan, you know, less stress, less hassle, get up, you're casual, you're relaxed, you're listening to you and your guests on the radio. Well, what we've done is we've taken our beans, we've spiced them up a little bit, we've added a little bit of chilli to them, we've gone with, again, a Donegal bacon that's been cured locally, we've just grilled it, so you've natural salt in there, and I'll come back to that in a second, and then I've just gone with an egg, some fresh herbs, and a little bit of mackerel that has come again from Killybegs, that is smoked in Killybegs. These are producers that are going to be here this weekend at Homegrown, and I've gone for what I call a double dip egg soldier. So what I've done is I've taken wheaten bread that I've made, and again double dipped it in egg. So the idea of the bread and the fingers is that you can dip it into the little lightly spiced beans, you can pick up some of the mackerel, you can dip it into the runny egg, there's cracked black pepper on there, there's seven ingredients, okay? You don't have four grills going on, you don't have pans going on, you can do this in one pan, and it's a share idea that
you
can
pop out. It's
like an
omelette almost, isn't it? But
absolutely.
It's not, I mean, you know, in the how am I supposed to do this?
Well, you have to get messy here now, Greg, and I want you to be tasting it and not wearing it at the end of it.
We'll see about that. You know, it's funny you talk about the eggs there. I don't know why, but there was a packet, I'm salivating here, I can't speak. There was a packet, it's the brown bread in particular and the egg, but there was a packet of eggs, and incredibly cheap, and I picked them up, and in fairness it was labelled on them came from hens in cages. Now I wouldn't eat them. Now I'm not massively into all of this, but you know, I didn't maybe, you know, we all have a little bit of that, you know, we want things to be more organic and more local and all, but we don't realise it, and I didn't realise I had an issue really with hens in cages until I saw that written on there.
It's you know, it's a great debate, it's a great conversation that you've just opened up, and it's one that I absolutely love engaging in, because you take the whole chicken thing and you take the whole egg thing. First and foremost, again, we'll go back to four different customers that are setting out this morning to do their shopping. Okay, there's some that have the perception that they want to go for only an organic, free-range, corn-fed chicken. You've then got the family, whoever's doing the shopping within the family setting who's on low income. They'll go for the cheapest chicken that they can get. Chickens, by the way, you can get for about €3.50, €4. Mm-hmm. In between somewhere, you're going to get the corn-fed, or you're going to get the free-range or the organic. Let's quickly break down what they all mean, okay? Go from the chicken and the hens and the eggs that you've just mentioned, which is the battery and so on. First and foremost, you're going out, you're going in budget. The second one up, maybe the organic. Well, what that tells you, and all it tells you, is that it's had an organic feed. Technically, it should have slightly better flavour, but it should also have more increased nutrition, but not a huge amount. But here's one very, very specific question, and that is, what is the flavour of chicken? Mm. Most people will say it's just chicken, because it is, because what adds flavour is the cooking process itself. Now, to put the chicken, whole chicken debate to bed in general, when you're adding chicken flavour through the cooking process, a roast chicken tastes a lot better than poached or boiled chicken and so on. Ultimately, it's around perception. And most of the time, the people that will pay that 9.50, 12 euro, 14 euro for the chicken that's organic, free range, will tell you that they care about the welfare of the chicken. Mm. No one cares about the welfare of the chicken if they're eating it. Mm. Is my opinion to that. Mm. You know, to me, it's actually more important to be supporting the local farmer who's trying to rear it on a local feed with local taste, local flavour, yeah, and so on coming through there.
So if you're going to take a stand, at least know what the stand is that you're taking.
Correct.
To some extent.
Correct.
Right, we're getting tight on time here. That's absolutely gorgeous. It tastes so nice. It's not even, doesn't taste like a breakfast. I don't even know if that makes sense, what I'm trying to say.
What you're looking for there is it's a brunch.
It's a brunch, yeah. But it's like such a mixture of flavours that I can't really eat because I'm speaking on air.
We'll leave it with you.
Well, yeah, okay. I think I'll definitely enjoy the rest of that. Brian, the Homegrown Food Festival, this needs to be supported because it has the potential to be huge. We've seen what's happened down in Donegal Town, and you've mentioned other areas. That perhaps was a space here for this in Letterkenny. If people come out and support this, this could become, I presume, a mainstay and has the potential to be attracting people from all over the country to it.
Absolutely.
So remind us what's on.
Yep, okay. It's 2 days. It's kicked off. It's open now. It's only €5. Kids go free. There's top celebrity chefs all day, on the hour, every hour, demonstrating live from the stage. They're showcasing local produce from over 80 producers that are there. They're in the Aurora Centre. Get along. You can get tasting. You can eat your way around. Come and see me. I'll be there at 4 o'clock. I'll be there at 3 o'clock tomorrow doing demonstrations how to cook without salt.
On your own personal level, I mean, you're never off. You never stop.
It's been absolutely brilliant. And as I say, it's great to be home. There's such a relaxed feeling to be doing this in Donegal today. I've just come back from Limerick, Dublin. We've been in Cavan. We've been all over the country. And this gives me an opportunity to actually shout and say, Donegal is having another food festival. Come up and taste our produce. Rather than the reverse way where I'm trying to take Donegal produce with me right around the country. Yeah. So food's a great theme. And this food can carry this brand and can help Donegal.
Super.
Without a shadow of a doubt, and the agri-food that's going on.
A Homegrown Food Festival today and tomorrow, July 12th and 13th, of course, the Aura Leisure Centre. Brian McDermott, thanks so much for calling in. I don't know, we can post you the plate back. Is that your plate?
You're welcome.
You're
going to
have to take
it. You can enjoy that.
Brian, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And there's a new series running on Highland Radio on Thursday nights, in fact. It's called Our Food Series. Mary Brophy is the presenter, Mary. Very good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. Good morning.
Now, the first show aired on Thursday night at 7 o'clock. I have to say, I listened to it. Incredibly well produced and a very, very interesting show, and touches really on what we're talking about with Brian there, the quality and diversity of what we have available here in Donegal.
Absolutely. I mean, like, just as you were talking with Brian, like, it really is an exciting time to be in food in the county. And, yeah, there's a huge buzz about food, which wasn't there maybe even 10 years ago. Like, there's a lot of goodwill for that homegrown, locally produced thing with consumers, but also structurally within Donegal now. You know, you have the food strategy that the Donegal Enterprise Board had issued there a couple of years ago, and there's a lot of work going on there as well. But, you know, there's a lot of hard work and commitment and passion driving that for small producers, restaurant owners. In this series, we focused on, say, those small producers, the artisan people around the county. But, you know, picking up on something that you said there earlier, Greg, you know, that for some people, you look at it and you think, well, this isn't for me. And this, you know, the idea of the buzzwords around artisan and homegrown, all that sort of stuff. One thing that came across for us during the series, and really what we wanted to, I suppose, celebrate and bring to the audience, is that, you know, that's on one side, but really Donegal has a long tradition and a long heritage. If you look at a lot of these producers, many of them are family businesses that go back generations, and they're, you know, that they're your neighbours. Yeah. They're people who are just down the road from you selling, growing pigs in free range out in the fields. It's really back to basics, you know. And celebrating that right across the county.
So what can we look forward to over the next 7 weeks, Mary?
Well, we travelled the length and breadth of the county, Greg. I mean, we were visiting community gardens, restaurant gardens. We were in Remelson in a farmhouse brewery. Conor Reid took me out to the pristine Donegal Bay to see his oyster farm out there, where he produces only what's called Specialis oysters. They're like the top grade oyster, and they're all for export to the French market. I'm making El Jazeera champagne with Martina Gardner. Mm. I catch up with blogger and home cook Donald Skehan. As I said, I was out with, in St. Johnston with John Hamilton there. He's doing wonderful free-range pork. And all this food is in Donegal. It's right within that county. You know, you could eat your entire menu from the county. There are great people behind that story, and we just wanted to bring that to the audience.
Well, look, fantastic. We are looking forward to the rest of that series. For those who can't catch it on Thursday nights at 7, it's a podcast on our website as well. Mary, thank you so much for coming on and speaking with us, and best of luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Mary Brophy there, the presenter of Highland's brand new series on Thursday night at 7, Our Food. And if you haven't heard that, as I say, it's online, or will be very much online, and it makes for some really interesting listening. And there's a real move, isn't there, towards highlighting what we have in this region right across the Northwest, and the potential we have to grow that. 086 77 00 555 is the text line if you wish to contact us here at Weekend Edition with Greg Hughes. You can call Yvonne on 07491 25000. She's halfway through that brunch now, but I'm sure she'll be able to swallow and pick up the phone if need be. And loads more to come on the programme. We're going to speak to Mary Coughlan. She's playing in this region, the Clanry Hotel, tomorrow night. Indeed. We'll see how she's getting on. And Nikki Bradley will join us in studio very shortly too to talk about her ongoing campaign. A caller says, could you ask Brian where would I get Muslim cloth? Unfortunately, Brian's departed the studio at this stage. But look, the best resource we have here is our listeners. So if you know where this gentleman could get Muslim cloth, I presume for cooking purposes, then get in contact with us. Just drop us a text if you like to 086 77 00 555. A caller says, I'm a small farmer. It's cheaper to buy potatoes and veg than to grow it. Indeed, and that's the problem, isn't it, sometimes, particularly in some of these big retailers. They do loss leaders, below cost selling of fruit and veg in some cases, perhaps selling it far less than someone could produce it. But then again, it's about quality as well, isn't it? And consumer choice. Some people love that and they're doing very well, and then other people choose to go down another route. But the key thing is there that the choice is there for us, and that's what we're highlighting. Joined in studio by Nikki Bradley. Very nice to see you again, Nikki.
Thanks for having me.
It's about a year, is it, since I spoke to you? I think I was sitting in for Sean that day when you were on talking to us.
It's been just over a year, so it's quite nice to be back on to kind of fill you in on what I've been doing since. When I spoke to you first, I had just launched the campaign, and I hadn't really at that point done anything apart from set up my training schedule with my two trainers.
Before we go there, and I remember speaking to you at that time, and it was like, you've launched it, but it was like there was nothing you could confirm at that time, so you've come on leaps and bounds since then. But talk to us just very briefly, for those who are not aware, of your condition.
Okay. Well, basically, I was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma in 2002, December 2002, and I had treatment in 2003. Ewing sarcoma is a rare form of bone cancer that affects very few people worldwide. So in Ireland, especially at that time, the support was, you know, there was none, really, to be honest. So got over my treatment and kind of things went back to normal. And then in 2006, I began having trouble with my hip, because the tumour that I had was in my pelvis. So the radiotherapy, turns out, long story short, the radiotherapy had basically crumbled my hip. Mm-hmm. So I spent all of 2006 on crutches, in and out of hospital, suffering from severe nerve damage. So that, like, nerve damage, if anybody's ever had it, it can literally stop you in your tracks. So then in 2007, they finally realised the only thing that I'd be able to do would be to have a hip replacement. So that happened in St. Vincent's in Dublin. So again, things went back to normal, went on to college, things like this. And then in 2000, and I think it was 10, I started having trouble again. Same thing, nerve pain, hip was getting quite weak. I was back on crutches. And at that point, my friends were all heading off to Australia. And like, because I've so much damage in there, they found it very difficult to diagnose what was wrong this time. So I thought I might not get the chance. So I went off to Australia. Unfortunately, it turned out that I had a massive infection in my hip. So it involved spending 6 weeks in a hospital in Perth. Came back and had the second hip replacement in Australia, and came back and just had bits and bobs done when I came home. So since then, Unfortunately, the second hip didn't take because it was specially designed just for me. It was top of the range, but it didn't take because the bone that I've been left with is now dead. So it's been described by my consultant as throwing, you know, seeds on a lino floor.
You need something to be screwed onto, put it crudely. I mean, you need to be able to get this in place and so it's firm.
Yeah, so I just didn't have that. So I've been left with a loose hip. Sounds horrible, but I've been left with a loose hip and quite a lot of muscle and nerve damage and a lot of weakness in that area. I actually broke my femur in 2011, I think it was, because of just how weak the leg was. So I now walk. I was told last summer, that I'm not going to get off the crutches. So that day was actually a turning point for me. That was when I decided, you know what, I need to do something here.
You had two choices, didn't you, Nikki? Yeah. I mean, you could have, and I think you'd be perfectly within your rights to say, you know what, I've gone through over the last few years, what I'm perhaps facing into the future, you know, throw your hat at it and say, you know, just sit and watch TV or whatever. But then you took the other route, didn't you, which is pretty much quite the opposite.
Yeah, well, you see, because in the lead up to that news last summer, I'd kind of been putting things on hold and I'd been saying, oh, I'll do this, that and the other when I get better. But I mean, in my head, I want to do everything.
Of course, yeah.
So when it's my body that's letting me down, I just couldn't go on feeling that frustration. So I have to do something. So my friend and physiotherapist Lorraine introduced me to Michael Black, who is now my trainer. So I went up with him last year and had a meeting with him, with Lorraine, and we devised an exercise plan just as a personal experiment, really. So that started into what is now my fitness and awareness campaign, which is called Fighting Fit for Ewings. So through this campaign, it's based around fitness, to highlight to other people that regardless of what you've been dealt in life and how you may be day to day, there's quite a lot of things you can still do. And some of the things I've done over the last year really kind of showcase that. And I've surprised myself.
Give us some examples.
Well, the first big thing I did was climb Muckish Mountain, which took 6 hours of constant trekking because visibility up there was just awful that day.
How was, because you're using a crutch and because of the situation you've outlined, I presume walking on a flat surface is difficult enough, but an incline and perhaps one that's not as smooth as tarmac as well, I mean, was that an advisable thing to do? I know you were trying to set some challenges for yourself, but it sounds like it's contorting the way perhaps your body doesn't want to go.
Well, because my situation is so unique, I've been told that the way things have gone for me, I've been told that I'm one of about 10 people worldwide to have had this happen. So there's no real guidelines. It's more what I feel I can do. So I always run everything by my local GP and my physiotherapist, Lorraine, because Lorraine has known me for a long time, so she knows my limits. So with the climb and Muckish, we said, look, we'll go as far as we feel comfortable. If I just really think this is causing me damage, then we'll go back down. But it was actually just the weather that caused the problems more so than my hip. We got lost and we ended up on the other side of the mountain somehow. I don't even know how that happened. But Muckish was meant to be in preparation for Mount Errigal.
Yes.
But what I got from Muckish was more than I could ever get from Errigal, in my personal opinion, because we just did so much that day. Like we had to have whistles so we could find each other.
That
like
box that had been ticked effectively.
Yeah,
you didn't
much.
Need to extend the challenge beyond that. And what else?
Well, then I tried rock climbing in the Gaeltacht. I think it's called, is it Crutch Island or Crutch Island?
Crutch, yeah.
Which is quite fitting, crutch.
not as fancy as yours.
Yeah. Now that I found, it was amazing. And the people I did it with were just lovely, salt of the earth people. So that was a little bit more daunting because, first of all, I'd never done that before. And to put all your trust in a harness and to be on a rock over the sea, like it's bad enough if you're over land, but to be over the sea and like the sea's crashing up against the rocks, I found that there was a certain point I was like, I don't think for any other reason than my own mental sake, I don't know if I can keep going.
Right.
But to be fair to the guys that I was with, they were like, look, just let go of the harness a bit and I'll pull you up and then you'll feel that it is going to support you. So I got to the top. Now, I mean, compared to what other people do in terms of rock climbing, what I climbed was basically like a glorified little hill kind of thing.
But challenges are relative, aren't they?
Yeah, it's still. And because of my hip, that was very challenging in that I can't bend my hip a certain way, so I couldn't do what normal people do. I kind of had to just bring my leg along for the ride kind of thing. So that made that difficult. But the feeling at the top and the pictures we got at the top were just, I'm very proud of that one because, you know, it was scary. So I tried diving in Miva Dive Centre. Now this one, I because of water pressure. I didn't actually realise. So it's kind of learn as you go, but I didn't realise that water pressure could actually affect my hip. Mm-hmm. So my doctor wasn't too happy with me and told me that I could only go so deep.
Yeah.
But that's part of a two-part challenge. The second part, we're hoping to swim with basking sharks towards the end of the summer. Now, I'm hoping that happens because I just have always loved sharks. Mm-hmm. I have this weird fascination with them. So if we got to do that, that would be amazing. I've kayaked in Garten. That was the first challenge I did. And again, it was something that I didn't even think I'd be able to get in to the kayak, never mind actually control it. So that was kind of nice. We even practiced me getting out of the kayak in the water and trying to get back in. And, you know, you're full of self-doubt. And I'd say into the guys, I was like, I'm not going to be able to do this. Turns out I was perfectly fine.
So that gives you, you've achieved the challenge, but also it's an independence issue there as well, isn't it? So, you know, it's something that you did yourself as well. Well,
I'm learning to, you know, to just go with the flow sometimes and not say to myself, oh, I can't do this, because 9 times out of 10, in fact, I don't think there's been anything that I've had to just say that I've had that I've gone thinking I could do and then turn around and said, no, we have to cancel this.
Anything else you want to pick out there?
I did recently I did paddleboarding in Rathmullen, which I've always liked the idea of because it's so calm and it's lovely. Now, unfortunately, that was one that we had to adapt a little bit because I have quite a leg length discrepancy. I have quite a large leg length discrepancy. So, like, it's meant to be stand up paddleboarding.
And that's difficult enough in itself. So,
And I didn't want to risk falling in and hurting my hips. So I just knelt and that was it. Like, I adapted it and was fine. I got the same experience as everyone else. One thing that I'd be quite proud of, I did my first 5K through Darkness into Light. It came to Letterkenny for the first time there in May. And that was good because that was tough. And the sense of achievement at the end of that was great. For starters, I didn't really know how far 5K was. And I was on the committee, so you think I would have more information. But I just thought that
You don't walk
shorter.
It out, do you? I mean, you sort of say, well, I think I can do it. And then it's only when you actually...
Halfway through, I was like, oh God, I don't know if I can keep going because my crutches were quite sore on my shoulders at the time and things like this. But I have to say, the support I got that morning, like that 5K happened at 4:15 in the morning. So for people to even be there, never mind to be supporting others, was amazing.
You obviously have a hugely positive outlook, or else you wouldn't have undertaken this in the first place. How has it changed you, though, the course of the last year? Have you surprised yourself?
Well, the best way to answer that is I went down for a regular checkup with my consultant in St. Vincent's there about maybe 5 months ago. And he couldn't get over the change in me in every way. He couldn't get over how much I'd accepted things compared to the last time. And the last time I'd spoken to him was before I started the campaign. And he just, I remember him just sitting there looking at me going, I just can't get over the difference. Yeah. And I started telling him a few things about the campaign and he was just like, well, whatever you're doing, keep going, because like this is a situation. He knows more than anyone how hopeless this situation is. And he's seen me crying and, you know, he's seen me in every different emotional state, and for him to see me now accepting it, like, you know, it makes a big difference. And
well, you're owning it and it's not owning you, and I presume that. So I mean, you've had huge support, haven't you? You've mentioned that gentleman and Lorraine, who I presume this is the same Lorraine was on
Lorraine,
last week.
She was on last week with you. Yeah,
and so you've had a lot of support, haven't you?
Well, that's the one thing like that I really want to kind of remind people, the support that I've had, because I'm not actually originally from Donegal. I've been here long enough now to know what people are like, and the support here is unbelievable. I've had, like, all my training in Optimal Fitness has all been free of charge, which, you know, when you think about that on its own, that's crazy. My campaign sponsor in Donegal Town provided all my clothing and branded everything. And, you know, things like that just make you stop and think. Make you stop and think and make you realise that there are people out there that for no other reason than for out of the goodness of their heart, they want to help. I've had people contact me that I don't know, complete strangers that I don't know that have wanted to help. Mark Porter, he's a firefighter. About 2 weeks ago, we had a fundraiser in Buncrana because I need new crutches that are going to come from Canada. They're extremely expensive, but because crutches to me are like shoes to someone else, you need them. And he just off his own bat, he organised a fundraiser, and we now have enough money to get these crutches. Like, even that on its own, like, that is just, it's something that I still can't comprehend. I can't, you know, I feel like in a couple of years' time, I'll look back on all this and I'll just, my mind will be blown. It's crazy.
That's if you ever stop.
Yeah.
You know, so the motivation of the campaign is to is it raise awareness of Ewing's as
raise awareness for Ewing's sarcoma, because as I said, it's very few people have even heard of it. Now, thankfully, because of my campaign, the word in Donegal, at least, is starting to spread around. And I've had comments from people that have been affected by Ewing's that didn't think there was help out there. But there's also the kind of the undertone to the campaign is to try and show people that regardless of, as I said at the start, regardless of what you've been dealt in life, you know, there are people out there that are trying to do the best that they can, myself included. And if you can get anything from that, then what I'm doing is 100% worth it.
And hopefully motivate other people as
well.
Yeah,
exactly, exactly.
Nikki, anything else you want to add before we go?
I think that's everything. I think I've covered. Well, there's one thing, the one thing that I want to mention, it's something that is extremely beneficial to everybody. I'm going to be taking part in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Well, this is something I'm going to try. Now, this may not work. I contacted Brian Coyle recently, and he's going to show me the art of Jiu-Jitsu, which is a form of self-defense. So that's the next big challenge. Now, because of my leg, there's, you know, yourself, there's like MMA and things like this. It's quite leg-orientated, yes. But he's going to show me moves that I can do with my upper body.
Super.
Because my upper body is quite strong now, but you need to know how to use your strength correctly. So I'm extremely excited about that, because God only knows where that could lead. And you don't know what's out there. You need to be prepared. So that'll be exciting, to say the least.
Fair play, Nikki. Listen, it's been fantastic to catch up with you. A Facebook page or web page if people want to get more info?
Fighting Fit for Ewing's. If you search that on Facebook and the same on Twitter, okay. You'll find that it's Ewing's, spelled Ewings.
So. Nikki, great to see you in.
Thanks
and great
for
to see
me.
You doing
thank
so
you.
Well. Nikki thank Bradley, take care. Bye. Okay, thank you for all of you who texted in relation to that query on Muslim cloth. You can get it in Spears Drapery, Low Main Street, beside the Ulster Bank. That's in Letterkenny. We've had another one from that. Ernest, thank you very much for telling us about Spears also there. And the Blue Stack in Falkara also sells Muslim cloth. Delighted to say, joined in studio by our last guest of the day, Tony Kelly, a driving instructor. Very good morning to you, Tony.
Good morning, Greg.
During the week, it was confirmed this new L-plate, N-plate setup. The N-plate for novice drivers means people will face certain restrictions. We don't know the ins and outs of it as of yet, but what's your take on it? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think the system needed to be overhauled?
Yeah, I actually, as a general whole, I think it's a brilliant idea. There are some restrictions. It's slightly different to having a full license and, you know, having, you know, the exact same as somebody that's been driving 10 years or whatever. But you basically come out of your test and you have to put up your end plates for 2 years. You have to make sure that they're displayed at all times, or there's heavy fines, actually. And then the major change is that normally you have up to 12 points on your license when you have a full license. But after the 1st of August this year, it will only be a maximum of 7 while you hold your license for 2 years. And then after that, it'll go up to the 12. So there are some restrictions on it.
You know, if it's there designed to save lives, perhaps most people will support it. But I think a lot of people who have gone through the testing system, mm-hmm. had their L plates up, you know, adhered to the laws, had licensed drivers beside them and so on, and then have passed their test, they might say, well, why all of a sudden now do I have to jump through this new hoop?
Yeah, well, you see, this is it. Like, and I mean, I can understand that, because, to be honest with you, it's sort of, if, from a learner's point of view, 17-year-old's point of view, it feels like they're being picked on an awful lot. Now, I know, as well as most of the people in any way into driving will know, that it's for their own good, and we're trying to kind of, what's happening is that we're trying to build an education early on, so as that good driving habits will stick with them for life. But it does seem very one-sided that the younger drivers are getting picked on all the time. But it's absolutely a good idea. Now, I feel like it needs to be developed further. I mean, you're restricted for 2 years, and then it's the same as it is now after the 2 years, where you rip off your plates and that's it. It's free to do whatever I want. You know, you should be, as far as I'm concerned, I think you should be tested after it again. Just on basics, not as hard as the first test, but something very similar. But I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's definitely a good idea.
Well, to extend out that logic then, and as you say, you know, in fairness to people of all generations, do you think then there should be legislation that means people have to refresh, i.e. maybe, you know, for every license is what, 10 years?
Yeah.
Every time they get a license, maybe not a full driver's test, but a refresher test?
I think so. I mean, like, you know, I have to say, it's in my job, I drive around all the time. I'm always in the town. And a lot of the time, I am looking out for other people doing something dangerous so as that we don't get caught up on the crossfire. It's not necessarily my learners. And in all fairness, if the learners make a mistake, that's fine, because they're learners, you know, they don't know it all. But, you know, a lot of the time, I'm saving small, like, really minute accidents from, not because of something what my driver did, but something that, you know, somebody else has done.
And so these would be classed as experienced older drivers.
Experienced full licensed drivers. Now, and it's not particularly age reflective. It could be anybody, like, but what it is an absolute lack of awareness and it's lack of responsibility as well. When you're out in the road and there's other people on the road, you've got to pay attention to them and you've got to have manners towards them.
I think one of the main problems I encounter in and around Letterkenny would be lane discipline and the use of roundabouts.
Indicators and stuff like that.
What? Indicators?
No use of mirrors. It's crazy. Yeah, but
you have to have the use of, you know, channeling some, because people presume that you know where they're going. Mm-hmm. And roundabouts work very well if indicators are employed. Yeah. If they're not, then roundabouts start to cease to function effectively.
That's the thing about it. You know, a lot of the time in my lessons, whenever I'm getting somebody to indicate, you know, a lot of the time they'll say, well, you know, what am I indicating there for sure? Like, I'm going straight and things like that, you know. But at the end of the day, what, as I always explain to the student at the time, what you are doing is when somebody else is at another exit, you are telling them where you're going. So was they're not faffing about and taking ages to move, because they know where you're going now with your indicator on.
All right, Tony, listen, I wish we had more time. If people want to get in contact with you with questions or maybe to lessons or whatever, how do they do that?
All my information is on Facebook, Tony Kelly Driving Academy, or Twitter or whatever. Give me a call, email, tweet, whatever you want.
How's that going for you?
It's going great at the minute, I have to say. Since probably March this year, I'm absolutely flying, so I'm glad to be busy.
Tony, thank you so much for calling
up. Greg.
And keep her between the ditches.
Well, I'll try.
Take care, Tony. Great to see you. Thank you very much for everyone who contributed to today's programme. Have a fantastic day.